Do we all know who James Brown is? Yeah, if you always know who James Brown is. Well, he was, and I think he still is, a singer from the 50s and 60s and 70s, and Vaughan tells me that he may even be still singing or trying to sing today. To some, he was known as the Godfather of Soul. And one of his songs starts like this. It's a man's world, it's a man's world. I would sing it for you, but I've chosen to spare you that pain. It's a man's world. I think the world has progressed a lot since these words were written, but the world that Paul lived in, the world in which Paul wrote the words that he did from God to the church at Ephesus, that world was a very different one to the one that we live in today. The ancient world was a man's world. Men held the power in politics and in society and in family. Women were lesser beings defined by the man who had authority over them. In fact, we don't really even have stories from women at the time because they weren't taught to write. They were limited and subject to traditional roles in the household. In family life, women and children and slaves all came under the absolute authority of the man in the house, the husband. Children had no voice and no rights. The ancient world was a man's world. Now, while life for Jewish families was slightly different and wasn't as harsh, thanks to some of the protective laws written into the Old Testament, there was what we might deem quite a callous cruelty in the world that surrounds the church at Ephesus. As men wielded power and authority they had over their wives and over their children and over their slaves. The ancient world was a very different world to the one we live in today. So as we read this passage for Ephesians, the challenge for us today will be to figure out how to apply these words from Ephesians 6, written into the ancient world of Paul's time, how to apply these words to us and to our world. We're quite close to the end of our series on Ephesians, and our passage today continues on from last week. Paul sums up what living in Christian community looks like when he says in Ephesians 5:21, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And Paul then goes on to look at three specific examples of submission in what was the most common household relationships of the time. So Stuart looked at the first of these last week when he looked at husbands and wives, and today we'll focus on those second two relationships. So we're going to look at children and parents and also slaves and masters. In each of these specific examples of submission, I want to be really clear that mutual submission is called for. Each of these three relationships come under that banner of Ephesians 5:21 that says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. As we'll see, the submission may look different in each situation, but mutual submission is the protection given by Paul to the subordinate members of the relationship to ensure that the relationship looks like and is as God intended. Now, I say that because I recognise that this part of Ephesians and this teaching on submission has been misunderstood or misapplied. And the result of that, potentially, is relationships of abuse and brokenness and fear and hurt and pain. And I just want to be really clear that in no way will I be advocating for a relationship in which power is misapplied and abuse results. And I think Paul is being really clear on this as well, because in a sense he levels the playing field by calling for mutual submission. Mutual submission that comes out of our relationship with God in the context of Christian community with Jesus as our ultimate authority. Let's get into it. Our passage today starts with chapter 6, and I'll read verse 1 for us. Children, obey your parents because you belong to the Lord, for this is the right thing to do. The first word of this verse is striking. Children. Paul is addressing children directly, and what that means is that Paul is assuming that when his letter reaches Ephesus and is read out, that there will be children there. Children are an integral part of the church at Ephesus. Now, in the world that Paul was writing in, obedience from children was a cultural norm. Given this, by instructing children to obey their parents, Paul isn't trying to change the traditional roles in their society, but he is trying to transform them in light of Jesus. And so given that, there are three surprising things in verse 1 that I'd like us to notice. Firstly, Paul is extending the instruction to obey from fathers only, which would have been the cultural norm. He's extending that to obeying both parents, mum and dad. Secondly, children are to obey because you belong to the Lord. Children are not to obey their parents because it's the cultural expectation, not because the empire forced it, not because parents demanded it, not because they have no choice, but rather, children are to obey their parents because they belong to the Lord. They are Christian children who love God and who belong to Him, and an outworking of this love for God is an obedience to parents. And the third surprising thing that Paul does is he takes away the absolute authority from parents by reminding children that they belong to the Lord. Parents do not have this supreme authority like they did in the ancient world. God does. What this means is that family relationships come under our relationship with God and thus must never come at the detriment of our relationship with God. If God comes first, then family will be in the right place. So the application here is obvious, isn't it? And when I was preparing for today, I thought, how convenient that this passage is the one we're doing today during school holidays, when potentially kids will be present during the sermon. You see, if you're a kid, if you're a child, if you're not of adult age, then you need to obey your parents when you want to and when you don't. I wish Rory, my almost two-year-old, could sit here through this sermon and listen to this and understand it, because obeying mum and dad is not high on his list of priorities. The latest thing, you've probably seen him running around the church a lot, but the latest thing that he likes doing is to respond with any request with, "No!" followed by running to the opposite end of the house. Fun times for obedience in the Barris household at the moment. Now, the situation in which kids are to obey their parents, it assumes the ideal one, in which Christian parents are instructing Christian children, and don't worry, parents, the bit for us is coming up next. But what that means is that there are unusual circumstances in which this command to obey cannot be strictly followed. But kids, you can chat to me after if you're not sure whether or not you need to obey your parents. If you're an adult kid, like me, with parents still here with us, then the concept of obeying looks a little different. I think as adults, I don't think we're called to obey our older parents, but we are called to honour them. This is why in our passage today, when talking to younger children, Paul uses the word obey in verse 1, but the Old Testament law that Paul is drawing on is the fifth commandment, which says, honour your father and your mother. And that's what Paul quotes in verse 2 of chapter 6. Honour your father and your mother. Now, this applies to anyone with parents, and it's something that never ends. As our parents become older, what honouring them looks like is respecting them and is looking after them in their older age. If you've got your Bibles open and want to flip to it quickly, in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 4 to 8, Paul makes a strong argument for looking after our parents in their old age. So if you wanted to read that reference to yourself, it's 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 4 to 8. Pardon me. Well, as is Paul's pattern in these specific examples of submission in common household relationships of his time, he moves on from addressing the subordinate ones to address the ones in positions of authority. Let me read verse 4 for us. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger by the way you treat them. Rather, bring them up with the discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord. Paul specifically addresses fathers here because they are the ones in authority over the household in Paul's time and in our time. However, I think mums were not off the hook. I think this verse applies to mothers as well. Paul starts with a negative exhortation. Do not provoke your children to anger. How could parents possibly provoke their children to anger? Well, by the way we treat them. When we're being unfair or harsh, when we're making unreasonable demands or when we're not being consistent, when we're being harsh in our discipline, certainly we can provoke them to anger. But rather than this, we are to bring our children up with the discipline and the instruction that comes from the Lord. The verb in the original Greek that we have translated as bring them up, that's actually one of nurture and nourishment, of love and care. And in fact, our nurture and our love and our care for our kids should come before they are of an age to obey. And that then provides a much more positive environment for our children to obey. So mutual submission looks like children obeying parents and parents taking on the responsibility of using their authority for the good of their children, under the authority of Jesus, out of reverence for Christ. This will mean that as we go about our instruction and discipline, we are positively guiding, we're providing proactive boundaries rather than reactive responses, and we're exemplifying the instruction that we're giving our kids. What about the end of verse 4? What about that bit right at the end? What does it mean for our discipline and instruction to come from the Lord? What this means is the most important priority as parents should be bringing our kids up in the Christian faith. As parents, we bear the primary responsibility to, as the Bible encourages, to encourage and model and teach and train and correct and discipline our children, all flowing from our own relationship with Jesus Christ. Now, as a parent, I certainly feel the weight of this, and I am greatly, greatly encouraged to know that the church exists to partner with parents. But the primary responsibility to teach our kids about Jesus, it doesn't fall firstly to the Sunday school teacher. I'm not just saying that because I am the Sunday school teacher and want to abdicate my responsibility. But it doesn't primarily fall to the Sunday school teacher. It doesn't fall to VeggieTales or to RE or to our kids. It falls to us as parents. So if that's you today, and I know there's not a lot of us here, but if that's you, that's me, how are you going? How are we as parents going at bringing our kids up with the discipline and the instruction that comes from the Lord? You see, we're not alone in this, but I want us to encourage to take Christian instruction in our families, seriously, to be reading the Bible and to be praying together, to be worshipping God together as a family, not just at church, but at home as well. You see, taking our roles as Christian parents seriously shows that we are taking our relationship with God seriously too. But there's a broader application here too. I don't want this to just apply to parents of younger kids who are sitting here today, because actually we are a united spiritual community. We're a church family together, and as the church family, actually, I mentioned it before, our responsibility is to partner with parents to help teach and nurture the children in our church. Now, you might not be a biological parent to someone here who is younger than you, but you can certainly be a spiritual parent. Being part of God's family at Lilydale Baptist means that you can show your brothers and sisters in Christ who are younger than you that they are a significant part of our community. And research in churches right across Australia shows that when we're serving and loving not just people in our own generation, but a people across the generations, kids have transformational experiences that result in powerful faith formation. Sounds a bit huge and daunting, doesn't it? Well, actually, it's not that hard. Let me share with you a story to help explain what I mean. This is one of my significant church experiences as a young child. We went to a fairly small country church. It met in a local hall of some sort. I was quite young, and there are two things, only two, there are two things that I can remember about this church. And these two things made me, as a young child, want to go back to church every Sunday again and again. What are those two things? Well, the first thing, there was a man there at the time, I think he was about my grandparents' age, and he would sweep the church floor after church every Sunday. It was this hall with a wooden floor, and so once the chairs had been packed up, he would get out this big broom. It must have been, like, the sweeping bit was orange, and it must have been, I don't know, maybe this big, and he would go up and down along the church floor to sweep. The broom was so huge that kids could sit on the bottom part of the broom while this guy pushed it around the church hall. And that's what he let us do. He let us sit on this broom and have a ride while he pushed it. I now realise how much harder we probably made his job of sweeping, but that's how he loved us. As young kids, that's how he loved us, and he happily did that. So that's the first thing. And the second thing, second person was the lolly lady. An older lady who kept a roll of mints in her bag. Just for the record, I now keep mints in my bag, so that doesn't define who's old and not. But it was this older lady who kept a roll of mints in her bag and gave them out to the kids after the service. These are the only things that I remember as a young child about attending this church. And you may sit there thinking that these stories just sound like silly stories from a young child, but actually, what those memories say to me, what those things said to me, was that that church was a fun, positive place to be, and I wanted to be there. I wanted to be part of that community. And who doesn't want their kids to feel like that about going to church? I'm not advocating that everyone here start handing out sweets to every child that comes into our service, but I do want to demonstrate, on a more serious note, I do want to demonstrate that letting someone who is younger than you, someone that you might be a spiritual parent for, letting them know that they are loved and they are valued in this church family, it's not a hard thing to do, but it's so, so important. While parents bear that primary responsibility, as a church, we partner with parents in raising our kids in the discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord. Now, just before I move on to the second half of the passage, I want to acknowledge that there might be some of you sitting here this morning who have adult kids who have walked away from the church. You may feel like you have done your utmost to fulfill your responsibilities as Christian parents, as outlined in Ephesians 6, 1-4, and yet your children, now adults, have walked away from their faith. They've walked away from Jesus. If that's you sitting here this morning, I just want to acknowledge the ongoing pain that comes with this. Can I encourage you to keep praying? To keep praying for your family, to keep praying with others that are in a similar situation, to share that hurt and that pain together, especially when it feels acute. friends, certainly there are many, many families who are experiencing similar difficulties. And I know that you're not alone in this. Your role as a parent to your adult kids, it will look different, undoubtedly, to when they were younger. But as you parent your adult children who have walked away from the church, please don't ever stop trying to be the sweet fragrance of Christ in your family. Well, let's move on to the second half of our passage today, and we're going to start to move a little bit quicker. We're looking at the third common household relationship of Paul's time, slaves and masters. There are a couple of things to point out about slavery in Paul's time. The presence of this address to slaves and masters, even the fact that it's sitting here in our Bible, raises the question, why doesn't Paul just come right out and denounce slavery? Why doesn't he just condemn it? Well, firstly, Paul doesn't condemn slavery because he isn't out to abolish it. This is not Paul's intention when writing about submission in his letter to the Ephesians. Rather, Paul is addressing the status quo of his day. In his time, there were slaves and there were masters. Paul isn't out to abolish slavery. Instead, he's out to transform it, as we'll see shortly. Secondly, the status quo of Paul's time is nothing like the cruel treatment of African slaves in America that probably comes to mind for some of us. In Paul's time, slaves could move fairly easily between slavery and freedom. Slaves were allowed to own property. They could conduct business and get married. Generally, slaves were treated well. Now, of course, the system was open to abuse, and no doubt there would have been some who did abuse it. But generally, cruelty to slaves was condemned. And in fact, slaves were part of the first century Christian household, like wives and children. And Paul assumes this by addressing them directly in our passage today. See, in this picture that I'm painting of slaves and masters, generally slaves, for the language that we use, generally slaves were more like employees and masters more like employers. Although obviously slaves had less freedom than employees do today. So we can apply this teaching on slaves and masters to the worker and boss situation. But I want to broaden it for us even further. I want you to think about, what are the roles that you fill during your week? Are you in paid employment? That's your work. Are you in a volunteer role? That's your work. Are you in a service role within your family, such as babysitting your grandchildren? That's definitely your work. In a sense, we're probably all slaves insofar as we all have some sort of a role that we fill. And I want us to keep these various roles that we feel at the forefront of our minds as we work through these verses. Of course, for some of us, we will wear the hat of master. If you have people who work under you, volunteer under you, serve under you, whether in paid or volunteer capacity, then you are, for the intents and purposes today, a master. Well, I said that Paul isn't out to abolish slavery, but rather to transform it. How does he do that? Well, Paul says that slaves or workers are to obey our earthly masters in verse 5. We are to try to please our masters all the time in verse 6. And we are to work with enthusiasm in verse 7. Now, that's not the radical surprising bit. The radical transformation that Paul makes comes with the second half of each of those verses, verses 5, 6, and 7, that I just read out. Let me read it. Serve them sincerely as you would serve Christ. As slaves of Christ, do the will of God with all your heart. Work with enthusiasm, as though you are working for the Lord rather than for people. Slaves are to work for, treat, and fear their masters like they would Christ. Although they may be earthly slaves, their real slavery is to Christ. In all we do, in each of our roles, we who give our time and our effort to others, we may not be free to change our situation, but we are free to change our attitude and our motivation and to consider everything that we do for Christ. The underlying principle behind these verses is this: Christ is the Lord of our work. Christ is the Lord of all we do, and so Christ must be our motivation for what we do. What motivates you in the roles you have during your week? Filling up your wallet, accumulating stuff, enjoyment or having fun in your role, your relationship with your colleagues? See, more than any of these, our motivation in our work must be service of Jesus Christ. Whether you are working or studying or caring for grandkids, serving in volunteer roles, we are to do it willingly and enthusiastically from the heart, working for Christ's sake. And for those of us who are masters, who have people who work or volunteer or serve under us, the instructions to masters are to treat your slaves in the same way, verse 9. Paul again is being radical here. He's levelling the playing field to say that God makes no distinction between masters and slaves or slaves and free. And so masters then are to treat their slaves in light of the fact that they are fellow servants of this heavenly Lord. I wonder if you noticed, did you notice how many times Jesus is mentioned in these 9 short verses we have in front of us today? I hope I counted correctly. I think it's 7 times. 7 times that Jesus is mentioned in 9 verses. What Paul has done is Paul has painted a picture for us of what it looks like to submit if we are a child, if we are a parent, if we are a worker, or if we are a master. And in each of these examples, our idea of submission and authority is transformed by giving Jesus the ultimate authority. That's why he says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. See, we as a church must exhibit the quality of submission in all our relationships, with Jesus as both the model and the motivation of our submission. For Jesus demonstrated the ultimate submission, didn't he? He was the perfect one, the one in authority, who submitted to an unjust trial, who submitted to an unjust death, with humility for our sake. His status as Son of God did not transcend his submission. And so in the church, submission must be central to our relationships. Submission is to transcend sex. Women and men are called to submit to each other. Submission transcends age and length of time in the church. It's not a reason for lording it over each other. Submission transcends socioeconomic status, with poor and rich mutually submitting to each other. With Jesus as our model and motivation of our submission, friends, let us make sure that mutual submission is the mark of the character of our relationships at Lilydale Baptist Church as we submit to each other out of reverence for Christ. Let me pray for us.